Hey, good to have you aboard. I'm here till 3 o'clock, and I think Dan Long. I haven't seen the sheet because it's not in here, but I think we've got the new sports show kicking off after us. Is that right?
Yeah, the Beat's coming up.
The Beat.
So that'll be Connor McKnight, Adam Hogan, Jarrett Payton, I believe.
Okay, yeah. We have to say we believe because none of us have the sheet, but that's almost certain to happen. So that's coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon. And I'm going to schedule a contest coming up. Let's do it this half hour, okay, Dan? The prize, a $25 gift certificate to, well, you can use it to buy the best darn deep dish pizza at the best pizza city in America. It comes from Lou Malnati's. Which, by the way, they have 39 restaurants across Chicagoland now. They opened up two in the last few weeks. www.loumalnatis.com. That's where you go to learn more. We'll play the contest in a few minutes. Now, to win, you'll need to wish happy birthday to any of these people. They're all singers. They're all a year older today. Rod Stewart, Pat Benatar, Donald Fagen, and Frank Sinatra Jr. This is going to change the way that citizens can make a difference in the world. Our next conversation here, it happens to me all the time, maybe you too. You read an article online or in a blog or at the Chicago Reader or the New York Times or Twitter or Facebook. It's an article about injustice. It's about poverty. It's about the inequities of education in America, Ebola, some problem in Chicago or the world. And just after you read it, you've got that feeling in your gut that, gosh, you wish you could do something that might in some small way make a difference. That feeling is really strongest right after you read the article. But then what happens? The rush of life sets in, the impulse fades, and you never do anything about it. And that's partly because you really don't know what you would do because, you know, you can't connect the dots. Well, there is a way now that connects those dots. It connects you when you have that impulse of generosity, when it's most acute, and it connects you to a specific nonprofit organization that's directly involved in alleviating whatever the problem might be. That's kind of cool. So we have right now in the Allstate Showcase studio, Jason Junish. I didn't ask you. It's Junish, Junish?
Kunish.
Kunish. I put a J there.
That's all right.
That's me in typing. Yeah, Kunish, because I've got that at the beginning. You're the CEO of Public Good Software. Now, this is our entrepreneurial segment, and I want to tell you that it's sponsored by Wintrust Financial. Let's not get into the background yet. I tried it out. I see how it works. It's very good. Why don't you explain a little further how it works and how far-flung its adoption has been?
Sure, and thanks for having me on, Bill. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. You're a fan of the show. I was happy to hear that.
I am indeed. So, yeah, love learning about entrepreneurship. So, the idea with the Take Action button is that we saw that there's this big gap between when you have that spark and you want to do something, and then, like you said, life intercedes, you know, other things happen, and you forget about it. So how could we make it so that instead of just sharing something on Facebook or Twitter, that you could actually go ahead, click on a button. Right now you can go to any article in the Chicago Reader and soon to be other local media outlets. We're working primarily in Chicago now. We're going national in 2015. You click on that button, and it takes you to a page related to the article that you just read about. So you read about violence or, you know, local food or homelessness. You want to do something about that. You land on a page. You see the set of organizations that are working on that. You can click a button right on that page and donate to all those organizations really simply.
Now, it takes a lot of work on your part to sort of vet the organizations so that you know which ones are most appropriate to direct people to. And that's changing all the time, because how do you know? How quickly does it happen once an article is posted?
That's absolutely right. Well, we have an algorithm that actually looks at the semantic content of the article. And through a grant from the Knight Foundation, we've been able to produce that code. We'll open source it. And, you know, right away, it'll look at that article and say, oh, it's about this type of topic. It'll bring you to a cause page. Every organization on that page is a 501c3 in good standing with the IRS. So we use what's called open data, in other words, data that the government publishes, to make sure that the organizations are legitimate and that they're doing good work.
Do the algorithms need tweaking? Did you have some testbed chances to test it out and find out, well, it was not directing quite right, so you have to do some changes?
Yes, we're definitely doing a lot of that. We're making sure that, you know, as we go through the process, that we get more and more fine-grained, and we're really using, you know, user feedback to do that. So as people interact with this, we're still a really young company and we're still a really new idea. So as people, you know, use the product, we're asking them to tell us if it's working out for them.
Now, I typically have people on in this segment that have up and running, fully established, profitable, past the point of no return businesses. I took yours because I just think it's so darn intriguing, and I really like the concept behind it. How do you determine when it's a success? Is there a threshold that has to be crossed of some data point that will determine that?
Yeah, for us, it's really about a couple things. One, we've seen that when you look at basically hard news articles versus soft news articles, so Justin Bieber versus 14 people were killed in the first week of this year on the south side of Chicago, what you tend to see is that the share rates on those two articles are about, you know, five times different. So in other words, a Bieber article gets about 200 likes, where an article about gun violence will get 40 or less, right? So one of the things we're testing is, are we able to change that ratio? Are we able to change the way in which people, you know, interact with hard news stories? So that's one piece. The second piece is, can we actually prove that we can get people to take action in the moment? You know, we've seen from our work at the Obama for America campaign, Dan, my co-founder, and I were both alums of that team, that if you got people in the moment, your response rates were exponentially different. In other words, if you got somebody who said, hey, I want to raise my hand and volunteer, within the first day, if you got back to them, they were 90% likely to do something. If it was a week later, it was less than 10%.
How fast does the giving button pop after an article appears?
Immediately. So in working with the publishers, like right now we've been testing this out with the reader, and one of the things about the reader itself is, what level of editorial control did they want to have? Was it simply, hey, we're going to, post a story, just shove this thing wherever you want it? Or were they wanting to point it more towards a specific cause or organization? Mm-hmm. And they can do all three.
I have to believe this is going to have total buy-in, at least on the media side. What does your instinct tell you?
Yeah, that's our goal. I think there's, as media gets more and more local and people care more and more about their communities, a lot of philanthropy is the same way. And so, you know, the traditional role of media in society has been to really shine a light on stories that wouldn't get the light of day otherwise. And when you look at big national media outlets, you know, it's hard for them to cover news that is that fine-grained. And we think there's a real partnership there between organizations doing good in their community and the media that's reporting on the issues that affects it.
Well, I used Ebola as one example. Are you going to dismiss those broad and international kinds of stories where people feel that same impulse to help, to do something?
No, we definitely won't dismiss it, but we are a young company. So as we grow, we will take on more and more of that scale of argument or that scale of issue. You know, for us, I always say we're a young company founded by old guys. So Dan and I are both experienced serial entrepreneurs. He was a co-founder of Sitter City. I was early on at Orbitz and Groupon. And
what's his name?
Dan Ratner.
Yeah, I think I'd interviewed him. Did he say anything
awesome
about that? Yeah, years ago when that...
he did.
Yeah.
Definitely. So so Dan's my co-founder, and lucky to have him. I joke that I'm the CEO with a smarter co-founder than myself.
That's generous of you.
You know, I've got a face for radio, though, so it all works out.
We don't talk about insecurities here. It's all positive stuff.
I'm teasing.
Hey, listen to Tom here. He's calling in. Hello, Tom. You're on WGN.
Hi, Bill. Live in Willowbrook, just south of you. Charity Navigator, are you going to try and tie any of this into Charity Navigator, which does an awful lot of similar work in terms of making not-for-profit 501c3s jump through a lot of hoops to get their A rating?
Yeah, we are actually going to – great question, by the way. We're actually looking at incorporating data from GuideStar. Charity Navigator does a great job of trying to get out and vetting a lot of organizations. They do yeoman's work, but they're – a small organization in and of themselves, and so they tend not to be able to rate enough organizations to really have up-to-date information on them. To date, they've really been focused on overhead, which, while it's one metric, we like to say that it's not the only metric by which you should judge an organization. So we
now, when you say overhead, that how much of your dollar goes to administrative costs and marketing, how much actually goes to solve problems in the world?
That's exactly right. And so it's important to take a look at, but there are reasons why, organizations might have higher overhead, and those might be legitimate reasons as much as they might be wasteful. And so it's really hard to take a look at one metric and really, understand what it means in terms of the bigger picture. We think the most effective way to rate these organizations is actually by building community and allowing the organizations and the people who want to support them to have a real discussion through our site about these issues. And that's what we're building towards in 2015.
Do you see any kind of synergistic use? Do you think you could have some sort of cooperative relationship with Charity Navigator so that you can utilize their data points and then build that into your model. I mean, because we're all of us that volunteer for organizations, the three T's, time, talent, and treasure, and we're always looking for ways to do that.
Yeah, well, like maybe exactly that would benefit all. Just put everybody under a big umbrella together.
That's absolutely right. One of our core pledges as an organization is that we want data to be really open and effective, and we want a partner. We realize that we're a bunch of tech entrepreneurs, and so in the nonprofit world, we're sort of the new folks on the block. And you know, our goal is to stand on the shoulders of giants, because folks like Ken, who's the CEO of Charity Navigator, they've dedicated their life's work to this, and they've been doing really effective work. And so we don't want to go out there and try to replace things as much as just augment what they're doing, and again, give sort of a transactional ability in the moment. So when you see that organization that you learn about and say, hey, this is a good organization, I want to help, there's a way for you to really find out immediately how to do it and get involved.
So Tommy's thinking about it.
Well, I appreciate it, and good luck to you, because I think you're hitting on a real need, particularly with your generation, or not your generation, generation following you. It's really hard to try and get the 20 to 40-year-olds to commit, but once you've got them for a good long time.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Take care.
You know, I hear that young people go to companies, and they ask about the philanthropic practices of that company, and that is used to determine whether or not they want to work for that company. So there is a big heart out there among a lot of people to try to do good.
That's absolutely right. You know, people talk about in our generation, it was work-life balance. And in the millennial generation, it's life-work balance. And that, you know, we used to say, we're going to make money and then we'll take that money and we'll make meaning with it, you know, doing some good works. But more and more what you're seeing is those two things are really tied together. And, you know, that's part of why we formed Public Good as a benefit corporation. So we have a social mission built right into our articles of incorporation. It doesn't mean that we're a bunch of granola crunching hippies. What it means is that we're running a sound business practice. And then on top of that, we're also making sure that the work that we're doing actually is supportive of the nonprofits that we work with.
Hey, don't trash granola.
I love granola.
I like granola. So you are a granola crunching hippie. That's Jason Kunish. More conversation with him about his terrific, what do you call it, an app, a button?
Sure.
Or
yeah, an app, a website, yeah, publicgood.com.
Publicgood.com, but that's not the idea, is not to go to the website, it's to read the article and click the button. That's ultimately where the people will interface with you.
That's right. You can come through any channel. One of the things we learned from the campaign was you had to be where people were instead of just hoping they'll come to a website to help you out.
So more conversation coming up. Let's run a contest right now. I happen to have right here a $25 Lou Malnati's gift certificate, and I think it just might have your name on it. Time to call 312-591-7000 to see if, in fact, it does. Tell producer Dan Long what he needs to hear, and it might be yours. He'll start with the fourth caller, Dan, 312-591-7000. Back here on 720 WGN, I'm Bill Mueller. We're here till 3 o'clock, so another hour and about 10 minutes. The guest right now is Jason Kunish. I'm getting that right, is that?
You are right.
Where does that come from?
That is Bohemian. Believe it or not.
Exotic.
Yeah.
And I want to, let's see, we still don't have a winner. I'll mention that when that gets locked in. I want to read your bio. It says, he is the CEO of Public Good Software, a social enterprise startup serving the public good through technology in Chicago. Previously, this is where it gets interesting, he was director of user experience at Obama for America, a founder of Fuzzy Math, on the founding team of The Point, which grew up to become Groupon, an early designer at Orbitz, an adjunct faculty member at DePaul and the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and the bouncer at the Green Mill. He finds simple solutions for gnarly problems wherever people meet technology. Who wrote that?
I did.
That's cute.
Thank you.
So you like jazz?
I do.
I'm a nut for jazz.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I go Green Mill and the Showcase. Maybe we should go jazzing around town.
I'm in.
Well, let me ask you, how did you get to be you? With all of that you've done, and this, which is basically a philanthropic enterprise, how was it instilled in your consciousness that this kind of creativity would blossom forth at some point in your life?
Well, that's a great question. Originally, you know, I was adopted, and I was adopted from the Catholic Charities. And so my parents had a really open heart, and they took my sister and I both in. And so it kind of started there. And my parents were always the people in town who just built social capital, right? We always had guests over for dinner. It was just sort of how things happened. And so I was a technologist and kind of had a really traditional path, you know, Orbitz, Groupon, et cetera. And, you know, there was a moment where my younger daughter, Vivian, my wife, Laura, had her 3 months premature. And we were in the hospital. And she was in the hospital for about 2 months. And we had insurance. We had all the things that you should do in that, you know, that situation. And the insurance companies really attempted to stick us with the bill and basically bankrupt us. And this was going on.
Now, that's amazing to me. You had coverage. Yeah. It was spelled out. What was the cause for resistance?
When my wife went to the emergency room, we misfilled a form, and they basically
in
said...
In the rush to get your daughter registered, and gosh.
Right, we filled out something
wrong. And
they
seize upon that as the reason not to pay.
Right, so they called us up at about... I was at home. It was a Friday afternoon. They called us up, and you know, basically... they said, hey, if you don't fax us this form by 5 o'clock, which was about an hour later, signed by a doctor, you'll owe the bill in its entirety.
Which was about how much?
It was a little over $500,000. And so, you know, that would have really done us in. And so my wife happened to be there because one of us was always at the hospital with her. A doctor happened to be on rounds. She grabbed him and immediately got a signature and barely got this thing faxed in. And this was going on at the same time as all the sort of death panel conversation about the ACA. And, you know, my mom...
The Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, yeah.
Exactly, right. And so my mom came down and helped out during that time period. And about 18 months later, I took my daughter Sophia and Vivian up to see my mom with my wife. And my mom died from a brain aneurysm that weekend. And so we went to her celebration of life, and about one-tenth of the town showed up. And it really showed me what her impact was. This quiet, you know, antique dealer... who was a painter, really had touched so many lives through volunteer work in so many different ways in the community. And I really wondered, what am I doing next? I'm running Fuzzy Math. It's a great firm. We're working with Microsoft and GE, and things are going great. But what does it really mean?
What's your purpose beyond making money?
Exactly. And so I got called to a local VC to do what I thought was a design 101 for a startup. And it turned out to be the Obama for America campaign. And the pitch was pretty simple. We're going to ask you to take a huge pay cut and work harder than you ever have in your life to do something that's about more than you. And I said, yes, I have a very understanding wife. Yeah. but so that kind of really led us down that path. And then...
were you the geniuses that were always being held up as examples, like that the Romney campaign was envious over? Because you were doing the social media thing, you were doing data analysis way beyond what anybody had ever done before for a presidential campaign?
I was very privileged to be part of that team. So my role in that team was basically to make sure that all of the super smart people who were doing that data analysis and were creating that social media were actually communicating and connecting with people in ways that truly mattered, right? That these great technology tools we were making worked for volunteers and for citizens across the country to help them get involved and feel like they had a part in what was going on.
So being an entrepreneur, are you always a little bit unsettled? Are you always looking for the next opportunity, the next challenge?
That's absolutely right. So as the campaign wound up, you know, there's this really singular experience where Eric Schmidt, who's the chairman of Google, introduces you to the president and says, you know, Mr. President, this is the technology leadership that helped enable your reelection. And he hugs you and shakes your hand. And, you know, he gives a speech about how you're his legacy and everybody tears up.
I hope you have a picture of that.
I do. I look pretty rough because it was a long time through election day, but it was wonderful. And then, you know, the next day you're fired.
To be fired.
Exactly. Yeah, the campaign is over. You've done what you set out to do. And so we realized we had this really unique perspective. Suddenly we'd understood better than just about anybody else what the needs of the nonprofit communities were. We understood the ability for technology to really connect people around purpose in a way that had been, you know, something whose, you know, history was being made. And so we realized that this shouldn't just be the purview of a political campaign. It shouldn't just be the right of, you know, a few really large organizations who do great work, Red Cross or Feeding Americas, but that there's, you know, over a million of these organizations working on a variety of causes. And if we could make a software platform that any of them could sign up to use and get this kind of world-class technology, technology to help them further their mission, that's something worth getting out of the bed for in the morning.
Did you have to talk other members of the team into this, or was it just self-evident that this was what we should do?
It was pretty self-evident. So, you know, we all sort of went and did it in different ways, and there's a lot of great organizations here in Chicago, you know, that came out of the campaign. Civis Analytics were part of the data sciences team. Modest is working on commerce. But we realized that there was a certain set of folks who'd worked on a lot of the volunteer management and fundraising software. And we said, look, you know, we understand how these things work. We're going to make this as a benefit corporation, so we make sure that the mission is there as well as the profit-seeking motive. Let's go out and make it happen.
So what is the little button look like that people now can only see on the reader?
Yep.
Online, what does it look like?
Sure. So it's a little button that just says take action, and it just sits at the bottom of any news article. As we continue to iterate on it, it'll potentially say different things and even surface direct opportunities to people. So instead of just take action, volunteer with an organization supporting this or give money right now to this cause. One of the things we've done in 2015 is, you know, give the ability for folks to go, you know, on basically publicgood.com/WGN, you can go, you can sign up, you can say, these are the causes I care about, and you can start basically pledging to give on a monthly basis so that you can, you know, make a resolution to say, I want to make the world a better place by ending homelessness or, you know, helping people, you know, alleviate hunger. And that you can just go and do that as a monthly sort of subscription. You
well,
don't
thanks
have
for
to
doing
think
that.
About it.
Dan Lum, we'll need to write that down, publicgood.com/WGN. And we can post that when we put the podcast of this interview up on the WGN Radio website.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. So this is the breakout year, 2015. Is your unbiased estimation that by the end of this year or from a year from now, will that little button be much more ubiquitous?
That's our goal. So, you know,
how easy has the sell been? Have you gone to Huffington Post? Have you talked to anybody else? And do they get it quickly and say, yeah, let's be part of this?
Yeah, we've had initial conversations with a lot of national media just to sort of test the engagement level, really figure out what the temperature is. Are people interested in it? The engagement has been wonderful. But, you know, one of the things that Dan and I both learned about building marketplaces in the past, whether that was Orbitz or Sitter City, is you prove it in one market and then you sort of broaden it out.
Yeah.
So we've really focused on Chicago, and, you know, we've learned some of the hurdles that the organizations see. You know, some of them are sort of editorial. You know, do they want the button? What is the button linked to? Are they seen as advocating for a certain issue?
Right.
You know, if there's an article about, you know, gun violence, does it link to a gun rights or a gun control set of organizations? And so we've sort of said we'll take a lot of that off them and kind of let them, we'll let the people actually figure out where they want to give their money and what they want to do.
All right. We've been talking a fascinating conversation with Jason here from publicgood.com. And the website, if you wanted to learn more about it and to maybe make a contribution, is publicgood.com, and it's /WGN.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
Bill, thank you.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And my hat's off to you. Oh. I want to say good things. Have you knocked on the door of the Tribune yet?
Thank you. We are. We're in discussions now.
Excellent. Because I know some people up there on the fourth floor.
Excellent.